Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 17, Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu, text number 32. Naham virincho na kumada nadado. Na brahma putra munaya suresha. Vidama yasye hitamam shakamsha. Na tatsvarupam pritagishamanina. By Srila Prabhupada. Neither I, Lord Shiva, nor Brahma, nor the Ashvini Kumaras, nor Narada, or other great sages who are Brahma's sons, nor even the demigods, can understand the pastimes and personality of the Supreme Lord. Although we are part of the Supreme Lord, we consider ourselves independent, separate controllers, and thus we cannot understand his identity. Purport. Brahma Samhita 5.33 states, Advaitam achyutam anadim anantarupam madhyam purana purusham navayovanam cha Vede shidulabhamadulabhamatmabhakta govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami. I worship Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Govinda, who is the original person. He is absolute, infallible, and beginningless. And, although expanded into unlimited forms, he is still the same original person, the oldest person who always appears as a fresh youth. The eternal, blissful, all-knowing, personal, all-knowing forms of the Lord cannot be understood even by the best Vedic scholars, but they are always manifest to pure, unalloyed devotees. Lord Shiva places himself as one of the non-devotees who cannot understand their identity of the Supreme Lord. The Lord, being Ananta, has an unlimited number of forms. Therefore, how is it possible for an ordinary, common man to understand him? Lord Shiva, of course, is above the ordinary human beings. Yet he is unable to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is not among the ordinary living entities, nor is he in the category of Lord Vishnu. He is in between Lord Vishnu and the common living entity. So, I beg for the mercy of all the wonderful and advanced Vaishnavas here that I can say something with humble sincerity for your pleasure this morning. So here we're continuing with the pastime of Maharaj Chitraketu being cursed by Parvati. In this particular verse, Lord Shiva is explaining to Parvati the glories of the Lord, how inconceivable the Lord is. And he'll go on to glorify the character of the Lord. And in describing the character of the Lord, the inconceivable nature of the Lord, he'll then describe how the devotee, like the Lord, also has such inconceivable characteristics and qualities, and therefore Maharaj Chitraketu was able to transcend the curse of Parvati. So, in one sense, really, this pastime of Maharaj Chitraketu enduring the curse of Parvati gets to the heart of the struggle that a sadhaka on the path of Krishna consciousness has to endure. Because really, for a practicing Vaishnav, there's really only one real challenge in attaining Krishna consciousness, and that's learning how to see the loving hand of God, the loving hand of Krishna, in when it appears to us that the goddess Parvati has cursed us, when it appears that we've been dealt a rough hand by the material energy. So this is really our great endeavor in spiritual life, how to see the loving hand of Krishna in every moment. Because I had the great fortune of being in at least in a physical proximity with an exalted Vaishnava who exhibited his transcendence in such a glorious way, I thought that it would be appropriate for me to share something of the passing of Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami a few years ago. And this is something not only, I think, very profound and moving in my own spiritual life, but also for all the devotees in our society, for all Vaishnavas, actually. It's one of the most glorious and amazing events since the passing of Srila Prabhupada. And so I think it's a point which is worth dwelling on this morning. I don't know how much you had a chance to hear, really, about Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami's passing in advance of the time. I'm sure as soon as Radhana Swami landed in Gita Nagari 7 weeks prior to his passing, that you heard quite a bit about it. Where I was in New York City, we first got the glimpses in the emails that he was sending out. In regular meetings that we would have there from time to time, Yagya Purusha Prabhu, our temple president, would pull out the latest of Bhakti Tirtha Swami's emails and read them to us. And at that time, I remember it was like summertime. It was around this time of year, something like that. And I remember that it was like a voice from a distance. It was like some kind of, I don't know, I just couldn't fathom what I was hearing when I was hearing the emails. It was like almost some kind of unreal thing that was transpiring. And I was just thinking, like, as Maharaj was speaking about the news he had received that he had terminal cancer, and as he was revealing the way he was, his inner feelings about how he was dealing with this news, and just revealing his heart to the Vaishnavas, it just seemed like, is this for real? I was just expecting that there would be some email that would come, you know, a week or a two or a month down the road, that, you know, it had been miraculously handled. Because, and honestly speaking, there was like, it was so perfect the way he was responding, that honestly feeling, I was thinking, Maharaj doesn't really have cancer, and he must know that he doesn't really have cancer. And, you know, in a brief amount of time, he's going to be miraculously cured from cancer. And really, this was my faithlessness. I was thinking, you know, it was like a show. This is a kind of amazing quality of his departure, which fits with the passage that we're looking at today of how the devotee exhibits the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Queen Kunti and other great Vaishnavas, they share how the Lord's appearance is like an actor on a stage. And we always hear of this in terms of how, you know, Krishna just acts as a human being. But in the pastimes and the passing away of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, I could see how actually there must be a quality of it also, of just how perfectly scripted every moment is with Krishna. How perfectly script every moment. It's like he's just coming in at the perfect moment, in the climax of the pastime, in the perfect way. Like when he kills the Kaliya serpent, and he like fastens or chastises the Kaliya serpent, and he kind of fastens his belt before he jumps off. Just every action is just like an actor, like in a drama, in a perfect way. So with Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when I was hearing the emails, you know, he has this departure. He's received his death sentence, and now he's responding to it in a certain way. It was like that. It was kind of like, am I watching a movie? Is this some kind of, you know, somehow it seemed orchestrated, and it seemed like Maharaj knew how to respond perfectly to it in a certain way. And so it was, I have to confess to you that when I was receiving these emails, a large part of me was feeling skeptical about this. Is it possible that he's responding in this way? So somehow or other, by the mercy of Krishna, I had the fortune to be in Washington, D.C. in around the turn of the new year. And that happened to be at the time in Maharaj's departure in his journey that he had his foot amputated. And I was only in Washington, D.C. for a couple of weeks, but it just happened that I was there right at the time when he had his first darshan just after he had his foot amputated. And, you know, I didn't know so much of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. I had seen him speak a couple times, once or twice. But the one thing I knew about Bhakti Tirtha Swami is that when he came around, we called it the BT Swami Express. Because Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he didn't just come and sit somewhere. In fact, the only place where I saw him give class where he was sitting was here in Radha Gopinath Temple. Everywhere else where I saw him give class, he didn't give class. He gave a seminar. And he paced around. He paced back and forth and walked here and there. And not only would he pace back and forth in his classes and walk around throughout the temple, but when he came somewhere, it was the BT Swami Express. He gave 5 classes in a day. He would be somewhere for, you know, breakfast, and then he would go give Bhagavatam class, and then he would go somewhere and meet someone, and then he would go meet some dignitary for lunch. And then he would do program after program after program after program in a day. You look at his day's schedule, and if you fit that much into a week, you felt like you had, you know, you deserved a vacation. He was the most active person I had ever seen. And from the minute a kirtan would start, he was just, you know, if I muster that much enthusiasm in the climax of a kirtan, it's a good kirtan. He was the most active person I had ever seen. And so when I came to the little house where he was staying in Washington, D.C., and it was his first darshan after having his foot amputated, and I sat before him. It was like a confrontation of my false ego, because I had to recognize, okay, now you have to see this person. I realized he's in complete denial of the reality of his death, his imminent death, because it was clear that the operation had failed. Now there he was sitting before us. He was emaciated and he had lost his foot. And he was the most beaming, effulgent, enlightening personality that I had ever seen. And I was just thinking, you know, is this person for real? But I had read a little bit about denial. You know, It's been studied. They've done thorough scientific research on how people respond to calamities in their life, especially death. There's a woman named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She wrote a famous book. It's a textbook that all nurses and people study in the matter. And it's called On Death and Dying. And there she goes through the stages that everyone goes through. Five stages every person goes through when they receive the news that they're going to die. The first stage is denial. Do you know that actually 20% of the people who receive the news that they're about to die, who hear from the doctors, you know, this is it, you're going to die, 20% of the people who receive that news don't remember that conversation ever happening 2 days later. They can't remember they have to be told again. They have to be reminded again. No, this is the situation. You're about to die. So this is denial. Bhakti Tirtha Swami was standing there, sitting there, talking about it, sharing with us, convincing us, look, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave. I'm passing away. So it was like, at that point in time, when I sat before him and he spoke in Washington, D.C., he spoke about being hijacked by the Lord. He had a special way of speaking about everything. He spoke about being hijacked by the Lord. And at that point in time, I realized this person is for real. This is a pure devotee standing before me. He wrote in his book, Die Before Dying, one meditation in which he spoke about the perfect escape. So everyone likes a good movie or story where someone escapes from prison. It's a funny thing, right? There's a famous movie I'll always remember watching, Escape from Alcatraz, Clint Eastwood film. In that movie, the whole movie, you know, you're rooting for this convict to escape from prison. You're rooting for Alcatraz was this prison, it was built on an island in the middle of San Francisco, in the middle of the San Francisco Bay, and it was a prison on an island. No one ever escaped from this prison. And so you're watching this movie about the one person who escaped from Alcatraz. So why is it we all have this there's something magical about this escape? Because we're all imprisoned in this material world. We're all imprisoned in lives that are not exactly, it's the curse of Parvati on us, something we hadn't exactly hoped for or dreamed for. We don't have exactly the qualities or the nature that we were wishing we could have. We're all imprisoned in this world. So Bhakti Tirtha Swami wrote about making the perfect escape. But his escape wasn't like a lonely prisoner in the cell. His escape was really the perfect escape. you think about the perfect escape is actually not when you have to hide away and just kind of, you know, sneak your way, like I think in that movie, in the Alcatraz movie that I saw when I was a kid, I think the guy like filed away, you know, in the rocks behind his, in his cell, filed and filed away for years and years with, I don't know, fingernail file or something like that, eking his way out. But the perfect escape is when you just pass right through the guards with a great commotion, just right in front of everyone with bravado. And there was actually a case of someone doing this in an amazing way in America. There was one person, I forgot his name, he was a forger or something like that. He was a number one person sought by the FBI. And the way this person escaped was, he was not in prison. He was just trying to escape the country. And they knew he was trying to escape the country, so they had maximum security in all the airports around the country. They had a maximum security. And what he did was he stole the outfit of a airline pilot, and he had a contest. He created a contest for airline stewardesses, and what he did was he walked through the gates of the airport security with 20, you know, airline stewards, he created these costumes for them and everything, supposed airline stewardesses. And in front of everyone's eyes, while everyone was watching for this criminal to pass through, in front of everyone, he just came through as this great airline pilot with these airline stewardesses, and no one recognized him, with this great hoopla. So that was the way Bhakti Tirtha Swami passed away. It was like he was banging his drum in the final days and announcing to the world, hey, look, here it is. I'm about to make the perfect escape. And he had everyone's attention. It was unreal. It was like an actor on a stage. So, like any good play, there's not just one actor. Some good plays there's one actor, but in this drama there were also many other actors, so there were two in particular I wanted to mention who played another role in this pastime. One of course was Radhana Swami Maharaj, and who was played the role of his, what he called his Maha friend. And the, you know, just, he had invited him to come to his Sunday feast. What Bhakti Tirtha Swami did was he wrote this, his meditations, Die Before Dying. Upon receiving the news of his passing, he wrote meditations, Die Before Dying. And those meditations are the meditations of a pure devotee who's about to depart, his final instructions. And you can see in those meditations how to craft your consciousness for also having this perfect escape from the material world. And Every Sunday, he would lecture. He had no energy, but he would save whatever little bit of energy he was, while he was in Gitanagari, he would save whatever scrap of energy he had to give a lecture on Sundays. And those lectures were not like ordinary lectures. He wasn't speaking philosophy in those lectures. He wasn't speaking theoretical knowledge. He was just imparting realization after realization after realization and urging devotees to take up the prayer that he had made in Sridham Mayapur after the installation of the Panchatattva deities. And he prayed to them, whatever it is that needs to happen to me for me to become more of an instrument of the mercy of the Lord, let it happen. Whatever it is that needs to happen, or come to me. And whatever it is that needs to be taken away from me for me to become an instrument, a better instrument for Srila Prabhupada, let it be taken away. So on Sundays he would speak on these meditations, and he one Sunday he had invited Radhanath Swami, and just very, very incidentally, almost at the end of the Sunday, at the end of his lecture, on his way back to the house, I saw the transaction. He just called Maharaj over to him and said, could you stay for a few days? He was expecting to depart momentarily. And as many of you know, Maharaj stayed there for 7 weeks. Just cast aside the rest of his program. And later I heard Maharaj say that he had never experienced such an intimate friendship with anyone as the friendship that he came to experience with Bhakti Tirtha Swami in those days. So this seems to be one of the amazing lessons of Bhakti Tirtha Swami's departure and the role that Radhanath Swami played in it. It's like, just like when you read in the Chaitanya Leela, just like when you read in the CC, just how deep the relationships were amongst the devotees there. Just how rich the love was and the exchanges that they had. And how there's a mission, yes, there's a great mission and a glorious mission which we have to pursue with all of our vigor. But far above and beyond the importance of that mission is the importance of experiencing the loving relationships with the Vaishnavas and delving deep into that ocean in our own lives. There were many wonderful friends of Bhakti Tirtha Swami who were there in that passing. And another one was Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu. And the day before Bhakti Tirtha Swami actually passed away, he was very ill. And Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu was... devotees would take turns singing, doing kirtan, doing generally just very soft kirtan for Bhakti Tirtha Swami as he lay in his bed, waiting to depart, waiting for his chariot to come. And in the day before he passed away, his fever was very high, and they thought perhaps he would pass away at that time. And Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu came and chanted before him. And for me, it was one of the most amazing experiences in my life. Somehow I had the opportunity by Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu's mercy to be there in the room, although I didn't deserve to be there. And just to see him sing for Bhakti Tirtha Swami at that time, because the love that he had for Bhakti Tirtha Swami was invested in every single syllable of every word of Krishna that he sang. And there I saw what it really means to chant the holy name. It was every word was a sweet offering to his dearmost friend. Every mantra, every name, it was crafted with the utmost care. Hare Krishna. It was a beautiful offering. And but there was one interesting thing about Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu. And I'll close on this point because my time is up. It's that Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu wasn't on the list of devotees who were there to be in Bhakti Tirtha Swami's room in his final passing. Bhakti Tirtha Swami had made a list of just a few devotees. He didn't want a crowd of devotees in his room when he passed away. He wanted just a few devotees. And Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu was sitting on the outside. And there was such a clamor. I was in the other room also. And there was such a clamor of devotees wanting to be there at the moment when Bhakti Tirtha Swami passed away from this world, to see him at that moment. And surely there was a clamor also from devotees around the world wishing that they were there at that place, at that time when Bhakti Tirtha Swami had passed away. But I watched Vakeshwara Pandit Prabhu, and he was sitting off to the side, and it was almost like he was disinterested in all the commotion of wanting to be there and be in that room with Bhakti Tirtha Swami. Because for him, it was like the victory had already been won. The real moment of victory had already been won. Bhakti Tirtha Swami had already surpassed the material energy and gone back home to Godhead. And being there and being at that moment, it was not the important thing. The important thing was actually carrying the legacy, actually carrying the lesson and the love and the glory of his departure, and celebrating that. And the moment Bhakti Tirtha Swami passed away, he started the most celebratory kirtan. If anyone was crying at that moment, It was not possible to weep tears of separation in that kirtan, because that kirtan that he led at Bhakti Tirtha Swami's departure was the most uproarious celebration of the victory of the Vaishnava over the curse of death. What for others is the curse of death or the curse of Parvati. It was a glorious moment of supreme victory for Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj. So I'll close here. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.